Well, it's good morning and welcome to the Valley of Praise right here on the Adventist World Radio. One of the most challenging times for any couple is going through grief. I remember reading the story of Elkanah and Hannah. As Hannah is seeking for a baby, and it would seem that Elkanah does not understand her pain, and it becomes a very, very, very painful experience for Hannah. It's as if she's walking alone. And the question is, how do couples go through grief? How do they go through seasons where one is crying or both of them are crying? And I've got somebody who deals in these things on a day-to-day basis on the line, Smiso Sbanda. Good morning, Smiso.
Good morning, Tamu. Thank you for having me, and very good morning to listeners wherever you may be today.
Now, Smiso, maybe if you could just give us the definition of grief so that we can understand what we're talking about. What is grief?
Okay, thank you, Tamu. You know, when we talk about grief, because we know it applies to different losses. And we therefore can define it as an intense emotional response to the loss of someone or something significant. So it's usually your response and your reaction to that loss. And you know, it could involve a range of emotions, which could include sadness, anger, guilt, and longing, you know, and normally it will manifest physically, emotionally. You know, the way you think cognitively and spiritually. So that's how, in a layman's language, I would define grief without going technical.
Yeah, no, I think that's very simple. That's simple for us, and we understand it much better. But when couples go through grief, in your experience, how well equipped are couples, especially within an African context? Do we understand what the other is going through, or most of the time it's rather a blame game?
As you will notice from the definition as well, we did say that when people grieve, a range of emotions and reactions are involved when it comes to the response of the loss. What we need to appreciate firstly is that as before we are a couple, we're two different individuals with different personalities who've been brought together by the union of marriage. So, as a result, whether we want to take it the personality route, where one may be a melancholy, where one may be choleric, so we would by nature grieve and react to things differently. Now, when we also want to bring it closer to home, when we look at us in the African context as well, like you rightfully said, one can come from the north, one can be from the south, one can be from the west, where we're influenced by our different upbringings, which are our cultural differences. All those will come into play in the relationship as a couple. So when grief strikes and loss happens, it means that our reaction to that loss, which is our grief, will be defined by all those various aspects, our personality, our background, our religious beliefs, our education, all that will influence the way we grieve. So we can't say there is one way of grieving, and we can't expect the other partner to grieve like the other partner. So yes, there would be differences when it comes to reactions to grief as a couple.
So, Smiso, do I hear you saying that? Because I've often heard this statement: "You don't understand what I'm going through." Some have even gone to the lens of saying, "You don't love me," maybe as an attack to the other to their spouse, to say, "I'm grieving, but you don't understand my grief." So, am I hearing you saying that even in the process of grieving, we should have this thought in our back, in at the back of our minds, that we are different, and therefore we will react differently to these things?
Rightfully so, Tamu, rightfully so. You know, it's very essential for us to recognize that grief is highly individual. And people may not experience even the process of grieving and the stages of grieving in the same linear fashion. It's always different. Now, it takes one to understand how the other is feeling for us not to have the blame game you're talking about. Firstly, when we grieve, it depends. It's an individual, right? Who have you lost? How close was I to the person? How has that loss affected my everyday life? Have we lost a parent? Have we lost a child? Have we lost a sibling? How close have I been, was I to the person that I'm grieving? So now my other partner needs to understand me. And because we said grief happens in many different stages, it will also influence the way my partner reacts. And because we grieve differently, if I have lost my mother, it would mean that I was very, very close. If it meant that I was close to my mother, it would really hit me hard. So the grief process will be a very traumatic one, and it will really bring me down, which my partner needs to extend grace to me and understand. They might not understand. I've noticed when I deal with parents who've lost children, one parent expects, or rather, I've noticed that the women feel that they should be grieving more than the husband. But meanwhile, the husband has also lost a child. And they're never at the same time, at the same stage of their grief. So striking that balance will always come into play where we need to openly communicate our feelings as partners so that we understand each other. And you'll also find that as partners, one expects you to move on quicker, and while the other person is still at a certain stage of the grief. So we need to understand each other then so that we don't end up blaming each other. You don't get me, but I am grieving. You don't understand. I am still down. We need to openly communicate so that we understand our different feelings and the stages of grief that we could be experiencing at any given time as a couple. Because to be honest with you, when a couple is grieving, Tamu, blame and anger can arise as they try to make sense of their loss. They're trying to make sense of the loss. Sometimes these emotions are directed at each other, okay? Especially if they are unresolved issues or if they have different ways of coping with grief. Some people prefer to just shut it down, curl up in their own corner, shut the world out. Not that I am not caring for my partner, but that's my way of dealing with the loss. Other people prefer to deal with it in a different manner. So you need to draw that line and find that balance. Whereas a couple, you understand each other to hold each other's hand through the grieving process.
As we were talking, there were so many questions that you popped up in my head, and I don't want to rush to them because I just want us to understand what are the stages of grief. Because I've seen a curve. I think it's the Kubler-Ross grief cycle, and the curve naturally is it's a curve. It's almost like a straight line curve. It goes up, it dips, it comes up, when you get to the point of acceptance. But some of the curves that I've seen, it's like I don't know, I'm trying to find a word. I'm a jingro jingro. It's the curve. Grief becomes up and down. But let's talk about the stages of grief. And it's not like it moves in sequential order. Everyone grieves their own way.
True, true. Never in a, it's it grief is not linear. That's one thing for sure, because it comes in different stages. Let us put it easy for us to be able to understand these grief stages. You hear the news that you've just lost your child, okay? So the first thing, the first stage is the denial, which will manifest, this is like your physical reaction to the news. No ways, it can't be. But I was just talking to my child, it can't be happening to me. Oh, you can't even acknowledge the loss. So you're just in denial that this really can't be true. You know, normally it takes you maybe being called to the scene of the accident, or for you guys to see the body coming in a coffin, for you to then realize, but no, this is real. So denial is one of the stages that comes. Take note, it doesn't mean that it's the first stage that will manifest when you
Okay.
hear the grief. You could somebody, they just hear the news, their child has died, and they quickly accept it because they watched the child sick and die of cancer. So when you hear the news, you accept it. Yes, this is it. God has allowed it to happen. Okay. So we also have the anger stage, you know, and this can be anger, which is directed towards the deceased person for leaving you behind. You know, but how could you? I've heard some people do that or say that. Or it could be directed at the doctors. But it was the doctors. They should have diagnosed this correctly. They shouldn't have done this. You know what I mean? It could be the system, you know. If you could be angry at yourself that you should have done something, you could be angry at even God, which is something which we might talk about, you know, as couples, and how your faith is affected when you're grieving together. So there's that anger stage. And always, like we're saying, Amachanga regime, like you want to call it, it doesn't mean that it will come there. You know, 10 years later, you might just realize you're angry again, but this couldn't have happened. That's grief. That's how it manifests itself. Then we also have the bargaining stage, you know, but this one normally, and I've highlighted before, it happens with the terminally ill people. If only we had, you know, God, if you heal them, we will do this, you know, wanting things to go back to how they used to be. So that's how the whole bargaining stage is all about when you're grieving, okay? And you could even do that even after the loss, where you're really saying, but God, I tell you, if you could have saved my husband, I'm going to be a better Christian. If you'd have saved my child, or if you could have saved my mother, who, depending on who you have lost, okay? And then the other stage of grief that we normally talk about, it's the depression stage. You know, you hit rock bottom. This is it. The grief has sunk in. You hit rock bottom. The full impact of loss and all it means in your life. The child is no longer there. Mother is no longer there. How will I move on? How will I survive? You know, and you know, it's a very normal response to any loss. Imagine you've lost $1 million that you had invested. So you can imagine your reaction to all your savings. So this will manifest with feelings of hopelessness, frustration, self-pity, and the physical aspects kick in where you are weak. You can't even get out of bed, the headaches, and all the other things that come with physical reactions to a loss. That's a depression stage. Then finally, well, I won't say finally, but you know, the fifth one would be acceptance. You know, this is when you finally come to a place of accepting the loss and everything it means to you. You find comfort and healing. You find that the changeables and unchangeables of the situation are things that you can work through. And you know, you come to a place where you even call upon God and you say, the Lord gives and takes away. Blessed be his name. When you find yourself praising God for the situation, you've accepted that your loved one is gone. So like you rightfully say, this is not linear. It will happen in any way. One can hear the news, go straight into acceptance. 2 weeks down the line, they're in denial. But no, did you say mom died? No ways. I think I'll just see them walking through the door. Then one morning they wake up, you know, one is hit rock bottom, they're in depression. 5 months down the line, they're angry. So grief manifests itself in It's just like waves of the sea, probably. You know, when you're in the sea, there's the calm. Then all of a sudden, there's the big wave that comes, takes you away, and pushes you to the end. The next time, there's the calm, and all. So it is with the grief stages, and which is why we say it's very essential for us to recognize that grief is an individual process. And you know, people may not even experience these stages in a linear fashion. So as couples, we also need to understand each other very much for us to know which stage of grief we're at. Is my wife angry? Yes, I think she was so angry this morning. She woke up and she was going on and on about how the doctors failed us. So it's a normal process. She is angry. We are grieving. But my husband seems to have accepted this because he has swiftly and slowly tried to move on to back to normal. Praise God, he's on the acceptance stage. Let's find a balance and life goes on.
I think for me, I'm confused, but I think you will unconfuse me as we go along.
All
Mine
right.
is this to say, I think the moment you hear the news, whichever form of loss you are going through, what are the most critical and important things to do as a couple or as a family when you are now going into that season of grief? Because I think it will unbundle certain things. Because in my mind, here's what I'm thinking, Smith. So I'm thinking to say, now that we're grieving, and you gave an example to say somebody might be getting to a point of acceptance, but somebody is at the stage of denial. The one in denial might feel as if you just didn't care. Why are you now at a point of acceptance? And it might just bring about friction within the family. So what are the most important responses to grief at the early stages of it?
Okay, I think the most important thing or responses that would help us to navigate our grief when we are a couple, you know, it's support for each other is the very first important thing. You know, listen actively, you know, to your partner. As in literally active listening, you know, we have a tendency. I've noticed with most partners. Well, I'll speak through experience. So many times when your wife complains and you've asked her if she would like to go out with you, and then she says, "No, I don't mind." Listen actively. Does she really not mind? Or she is saying, actually, yes, please do take me out. Or the usual common answer when you get home and say, how was your day today? She's like, okay. Was she really okay? Or there was more to it since you guys are grieving. So active listening is very important. Listen to the non-verbals, listen to the unspoken word that your partner is yearning for, most important thing. Okay. So how about offering empathy and validation? Try and put yourself in your partner's shoes. As a father too, he is grieving. As a son too, he is grieving. You know, and then we normally have different coping mechanisms. It is very important for us to respect each other's coping mechanisms. You know, if my husband decides he's shutting himself out, I should be able to understand that that is who he is, and I'm going to respect the way he copes with that. Okay. And it's important as well, okay,
You
that
talk
you
about
find ways to
continue on, ask
connect
my question.
emotionally and physically. It's fine. And you know, it's very important that you find ways that you will connect emotionally and physically, you know, because as couples, you know, when you've lost somebody and you are grieving, sometimes it's very difficult for you to connect emotionally because you're in two different worlds, your worlds apart. And physically is something else. It's just a taboo. It means, okay, so we can't cuddle. neither can we have sex because we've just lost somebody. But what are the immediate ways that we can connect emotionally and physically without losing it some way, somehow along the line? I might have missed the question, Tamu, so in case I didn't quite answer the question, so you might have to answer it. All of a sudden, I feel I've hit a tangent, but
No,
anyway.
you've answered it, but in the process of answering it, you just triggered another question where you're saying one should read between the lines, and I'm tempted to say, shouldn't there's always been this argument to say men don't understand women, and it tends to frustrate women. And my question is, wouldn't it be much easier or better if women were straight out in terms of communication to say, this is how I feel, this is what I want, rather than to wait for men to read between the lines? Because at times, I think for us as men, it becomes a bit difficult to interpret certain actions or to read between the lines.
Now you ask a million-dollar question, Tam. By nature, you'll understand women are a special being and kind
Read.
of people. Yes, we're just meant to get men quizzing. They'll want you. That's just who we are. We want you to be guessing and second guessing. We want you to probe us some more. We want you to say, "Oh, but is this what you meant?" So that I can then say, "But you don't get me. You don't get me." So, look, I suppose you're right. If life was that easy, then women should just be straight up. But because we are women, we are not straight up. But the world has changed. Couples have just decided to, you know what? I'm not going to be taking that. Our rules in this home, you are hungry, you are not happy, stated. I'm not going to be second guessing. So it's a couple's thing. I suppose being this special being, that's just how we're made to be, to get the men second guessing, to bring the spice in the relationship.
No, Smith. I think for me, it becomes a bit, because I think if you're going through a process of grief and the other one cannot read between the lines, I think it simplifies things if we were to be a bit more open, because I think the reading between the lines might lead to frustration, because I tend to see us as men misinterpreting a whole lot of things. And the misinterpretation that we do tends to cause a lot of quarrels in homes. And I'm simply an advocate for saying, let's put things in black and white, simple and plain. Well, you,
No,
I
I
don't
totally agree with you, Tom. In fact, you are very correct. I agree with you. You know, for you to find that balance, you know, and to make the support as you grieve together easy, I think it's very crucial for partners to communicate their needs, you know, of how you want to be supported during the grief. Do you need space? How are you going to find your way again after this loss? You know, sometimes partners can require space, and no, I think I need time alone. While giving space can be necessary, it's also very essential to maintain open communication. And in that way, everything is in black and white. You've communicated your needs, so you ensure that none of the partners will feel abandoned or isolated in the grief. So communication is very key. That's one thing for sure, and should be expressed very clearly. But that doesn't mean that it's cast in stone. You will still find your typical either partners who find it very difficult to express themselves. Men too, Tamu, also do not express themselves. 90% of the time, men are always knowing, right? I'm okay. I'm okay. No, nothing, nothing. So, I suppose we should find ways as couples of how we can openly communicate our needs and express each other.
I think maybe my question for me, which answers this whole conversation at this point, Smiso, is how important is it to grieve at that point when the loss happens? Because I think that I was in a discussion with in a panel recently, and somebody was saying that you know what, as a man, I should stand up and walk and start doing the things that need to be done at that point in time. I will see the grieving later. And in my mind, I thought that that kind of didn't deal with the issue of grief. And I think my question is, at that point in time, how important is it to, let me put it in simple terms, how important is it to cry, or how important is it to grieve at that point in the early stages?
You know what? The author of our lives says there is a time for everything, all right? A time to be born, and to everything under the sun, there is a season, right? And there's a time to die. And remember, in our culture and even in biblical times, when a baby is born, there is celebration, there is rejoicing, there is all that goes on in the family and in every culture. When somebody's born, it's a time of celebration, all right? But when somebody dies, no matter the culture, it is a time of loss. Everything is solemn. Some people will shave their heads. Some people will apply what you call ashes and whatnot to show that things have changed. Now we're dealing with a not so pleasant situation, and it is time to cry, which is why you find in our African setups, people gather together to cry. And when you look back now, it's because even our forefathers understood the importance of letting out those mo emotions and that ritual to get together and cry and mourn for days. When you look back in hindsight, you realize that, you know what? That mourning period, whether it was for a wife who would azile for a whole year before doing certain things, it had the healing effects afterwards. Now, can you imagine a Coca-Cola bottle, which is full of carbon and all the like, and closed tightly inside? This is you holding your tears, all your anger, your bargaining, your numbness, your acceptance, your depression, all those stages of grief closed up. You hold them, you are shaken, they shake the bottle, you go through your everyday life, and you quickly get up for you to then open them loose 5 months down the line or 10 years down the line. You open that bottle of Coca-Cola and everything just explodes, and it's
Explodes.
such a mess. Yes, so it is very important for us to grieve. So we will, at this point, forget the African saying that says indoda ayikhali, but indoda layo will cry and moan and grieve in their own way. So it is very important, Tamu, for you to grieve. I'll also share something. When I do my grief counseling, normally when I get a referral or when somebody calls me and says, I want to come through for therapy, and I find out, I ask them, how long ago did you lose your loved one? And somebody says to me, last week. I tell them, it is too soon for you to come for therapy. You are still deep in mourning. Right now, you should be home. Are you struggling to sleep? Yes, that's good. You should be struggling to sleep. You can't have lost a child or lost a mother and be able to find sleep. It's a normal grief process. Oh, I'm failing to eat. Yes, you should be going through that because this is what follows a loss. There will be lack of sleep, there will be lack of eating, there will be all sorts of things happening to you because it is the grieving process. So go through it, do the mourning, zila kala lifelwe ufelwe, look the part for that particular period so that when you then come out of it, we're able to navigate it together. After that, When you're struggling to cope, then we hold your hand in therapy to help you throughout the grief. But there's a period where you just have to mourn when it happens.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to Smiso Sbanda, and we're talking about grief, grieving couples. And I think for me, I was listening to one therapist, and they were saying that we have never been taught how to grieve. And I think it's beginning to make sense to me. We've never really understood the process of grieving. And if you've got your thoughts, please send them to our WhatsApp line and tell us your thoughts and experiences in terms of grief. Now, moving on, Smiso, let's talk about your experiences in counseling. Let's talk about the spiritual aspect of things. What has been your learnings or your observations spiritually when people go through grief? And what advice can you give us?
Oh, you know what, Tamu? From experience, dealing with different people, from my own experiences, I've learned that loss can lead to shifts in spiritual beliefs. Okay. I've seen couples who've come and they're doubting the existence of God. Okay. Spiritually, they are shaken. God, where were you when this loss happened? Where were you when this happened? And it can take a totally different turn, Tamu. Now we're in the height of people fighting spiritual warfares. Have you heard those ones, Tamu? People who believe that there's a warfare somewhere. This is a generational curse. You know, all those are spiritual things coming in because of the grief, right? And your staunch Christian, all of a sudden, knowing that, no, but I went to that family gathering and that uncle greeted my pregnant wife and the baby didn't make it. Do you understand? So there's that spiritual shift. People change their views spiritually, but that doesn't always follow. Like I said, you do find some who come to the point of acceptance, who understand that there is a time for everything. God has allowed this to happen. Blessed be his name. God gives and God takes away. Okay. So now couples may navigate this phase by engaging in open and very supportive conversations about their perspectives, right? In their spiritual life, you know, what are the shared rituals or practices that are going to happen regarding this grief? By rituals, I'm not talking about anything out of the ordinary. I'm talking about the simple, what are we going to do? How is the funeral going to run? How is it going to give us closure? Which pastor is going to give the word? Are we going to how is the memorial service going to go? The burial after the funeral, are we going to have something in the home that's going to remind us of our loved one? What, how are we going to move on from here? You know, things like that. That can help discussing that. And we shouldn't underestimate the power of therapy. We shouldn't underestimate the power of our spiritual or church leaders in our lives. You know, remember, pastors are trained in these areas. They know the verses to read to comfort somebody who's grieving. They know how to navigate this to help us stay in the faith during our grief when we are losing it. They know how, you know, to draw the lines between us thinking that, you know, the universe is against us or other people are against us, hence this loss. So the spiritual views really come and ruffle up couples after a loss. I'll tell you something very interesting. Just recently, my daughter was in grade 6, came home with homework in Shona. We live in Zimbabwe, Harare. So the Shona homework was talking about the traditional rituals that happen when somebody dies. And there were simple questions like, Why does a body come home when somebody dies? Why is a young wife not allowed to go to the grave site? And in Shona, there's something that they call gate. I learned it last term. Tamugate is it's a process where with the Shona culture, every time when somebody dies, there is the close family members are supposed to go and they call it kufamba. They need to go and do some inquiries. We at Jigwama Tambo, so that they find out who could have killed their loved one. That is it. It's the tradition, okay? That's the Shona tradition. So these were things that happened with Dala, and there was so much that I learned from my daughter's homework about the Shona culture, okay? So which means that the spiritual aspect and the beliefs for the Shona people back then, even to this day, were not necessarily Christians. When there is grief involved, all those aspects will come into play, okay? Not necessarily, but then it will be influenced by that. And there's a saying that they say in Shonanzi, Kwafamuna kushayike muroi. Do you understand? There always has to be a reason to why somebody died, okay?
That actually, because I had this question at the back of my mind when you started taking that direction, to say within the African context, and I want to tie it back to a verse that you quoted from the Bible. I think it's Ecclesiastes chapter 3, where it says, "There's a time for everything, there's a season for everything." And it would seem to me that in the African context, no one should be dying. Like, why does a husband die? He was driving, got caught up in an accident. We now have to go and consult. Why did he die in an accident? He was sick. He was st struck by a stroke. We have to consult. Doesn't that make the grieving process even more difficult when we don't accept that there are things that naturally happen? Unless and until it was a murder, then we need to get closure. But with the natural death, it would seem that we make us our lives more difficult, or we our grief more difficult by not accepting these things.
Correct, correct. So I think we thank God because we're Christians. We've come to the point of accepting and understanding these things. He was driving, got involved in an accident. We believe that. We know that. Have you noticed, even in the African culture, Tamu, you work hard for your family. You've sent your children to the best schools. You've got yourself a house. It's not normal. There is definitely something to you acquiring these things. So, which is that other spiritual belief that people will have that no, this just can't be it. What caused the stroke? They're always seeking and seeking, you know, that's just how the African culture is. But look, we thank God because in us being Christians, we're able to see beyond that and have a better understanding and a clearer view of how some of these things come to be.
Because I really think that we make life more difficult for ourselves by pursuing, hey, who killed him? And yet this person was not eating healthy, or this person was just had an inborn disease. It is what it is. But I think at the end of the day, let's not make our grief even more difficult than that. Let's move on, Smiso. The issue of friends and family in the season of grieving. And I asked this question in light of the fact that back in the day, when I was slightly younger than what I am right now, when somebody went through grief, there was the aunties, the grandmothers that came through and grieved with you during the season of where the losses happened, and after. And you'd find that people would stay 6 months after the death of somebody, or even after something has happened, just to grieve with you and make sure. How important, And I feel like we've lost something critical in that aspect. How important was that for us to have family and friends grieving with you?
We can never underestimate the power of support in anything, especially for times when we are down and we need help, Tamu. It is very important, which is why you will notice that when you've lost somebody or you've experienced or are experiencing grief, the first thing you are rather advised to do is to seek support. Now, you see, while your family members stayed with you the 6 months afterwards, in our own African way of doing it, they realize that once you go into that depression, you have no one there with you. Is the depression going to lead to suicide? Is the depression going to lead into something clinical that will need medical attention? So you had family to support you around. On that day when you can't get up and cook, there was somebody to do the cooking. On the day where you've lost hope, you have somebody around to be giving you hope. On the day that you're down and out, you even have somebody to help pray with you, even if you can't pray because you're angry at God, but the people around you in the home will pray with you. And when you don't have somebody to talk to, you just had that support, which is something amazing about our culture and family. Now we have all those things in the form of support groups, okay? Our families could be far away. So as a couple, depending on who you lost, there are so many support groups that deal with different aspects of grief that will deal with couples who've lost their children. For example, we have Healing Moms that deals with pregnancy and infant loss for couples who've experienced that. I've seen couples or widows or widowers because they're in spaces where people have experienced the same loss and there are shared experiences there, and there are a whole lot of supporting information that is shared in those platforms. So the family back then, and even to this day in some cases, give that much needed support that one always requires when they are grieving. So very important. I had a friend, you know, when I lost my son. And at some point, I thought I really needed space, but she was always there coming to my house. And she said, "Do you know what? Because I've lost a child too, I know what you're going through. I know right now you're probably pondering why the doctor did this." You know, she was always there. "Now you're going back to work. Look out for this. When you go to work, people will be asking you about the baby. People, you know, just to prepare me." So this is it. That's the support you need from friends and from people around you. But take note as well, one day you could be the one who is supporting that couple that is grieving. What are you saying to the couple as that supporting person? What sort of help are you offering to that couple that needs support that is grieving? So it's important, know what to say. Let's be very emotionally intelligent in having to say the right things. Offer practical help. Do you guys need somebody to help you with the school run? Because chances they can't drive. Do that. I'll pick up the kids. Is this what you need? You know, that's the sort of support that a grieving couple could be needing sometimes. And let's say the funeral or the loss has just happened. Somebody can't do the paperwork. You know, a lot of times there's a burial order needed, hospital bills, and a whole lot of things. So it is very important to be supportive as well to a grieving couple by offering the practical help. Sometimes you might say, "Please call me when you need help." Chances are they are not going to call you. Offer the help. "I am on my way to your house. Would you need something on my way on the way there?" You know, because you want to be there for them. So that's support that we're talking about and what family is all about, being practical in the grieving process.
Yeah, ne. Can I, now this one is a bit not uncomfortable for me to ask, but a bit complicated, because I remember about 14 years ago, somebody asks me and says, "My spouse is now asking for sex, and we've just come from a grieving season. And in my reading, in preparation for this conversation, one website then says, attend to your body, have sex and attend to your sexual relationship. And I'm a bit confused. I didn't have an answer then. I don't have an answer still now. But how do couples then navigate sexual relationships? Let's say it's 1 year down the line and somebody's saying, we still haven't had sex. And I've got to the point where I now desire to have it, but my spouse is still grieving. How do they then handle such things?
Oh, that sounds so tricky, Tamu, because remember, I don't know how couples operate and how their sexual lives are, but there's one thing for sure about sex. I'm not a sex expert, but so much is involved when it comes to sex, the emotional beats, the physical beats, and things like that. And I believe that in the interactions as couples and as they are grieving, like we talked about earlier on, you remember saying, do not ignore the physical aspect. Let's deal with the emotional aspect as well. You know, those are things that you can navigate slowly together as a couple, because it is a fact. Grief will significantly affect a couple's sexual relationship, and because partners may experience changes in their libido and emotional availability. So it's very, very important as well for couples to communicate openly about their needs and to be patient and understanding with each other during this time. I'm sure there's always a way. Even the Bible said, I'm sure in the famous verse, I'm sure you can tell me what that verse is, which everybody says, oh, but only for a little while and quickly get back to it.
The
You
one about
know,
fasting in Corinthians, I think, to say don't deny.
yes. Yes. So whilst we are grieving, I think that verse also meant during grief as well. Grieve, but for a little while. And when the time is right, quickly get back to it, because we all know what sex can do and how it can affect us as couples. For us to get to a point of a year or so, which is possible and has happened, but it's something that needs to be communicated and worked on as a couple. Sex and the impact on sexual relationships is very real during grief, but it really needs patience and understanding from both partners. Let's work on it. At some point during the cuddling, I've always thought, I've heard people who've said that during their grief, it was the sex that actually helped them overcome, because during the crying, the cuddling, they, you know, one thing then led to another, but that doesn't always follow.
But I think it's important to have that discussion, Esmiso, because I think, as you rightly say, the communication becomes an important part of that process. Because if those things are not handled and addressed, it could lead to divorce. And maybe that's the question
Does
that
that
I
mean?
want to ask, to say, generally, what leads to divorce, after grief? What's the common thread? Because I've seen a lot of stories of couples then divorcing after a season of grieving.
Sorry, please come again, Tom.
All right. I was saying, there's been the element of divorce in most cases where people have gone through a season of grief. And the question is, what's the common thread that leads to divorce after grieving?
You know, divorce and grief, I suppose, would really come because the couple has failed to find common ground and understand each other. Remember, when you've lost a loved one and when grief strikes, it changes you completely and totally as an individual, right? You can never be the same, Tamu, after you've lost your child or you've lost your mother. So, in you becoming the new person to navigate after the loss, have you found common ground with your partner? Are you guys still at the same equilibrium in terms of everything? Are you agreeing on finances? Are you agreeing on a whole lot of things? Have you found ground to be intimate again? And have you been able to move on together from this point of the loss to where you are headed? So a whole lot of disagreements come into play, or a whole lot of lack of consensus and agreements and things like that. I suppose this is quite debatable and open to comments as well from other people, but all those aspects could then lead to the divorce after experiencing grief.
Now, as we wrap it up, Smith. So earlier on, you said if so, you ask when a couple has what, when did the incident happen? How long has it been? And if they say last week, you would then say no, it's fine. Come at a later date. How soon, or what's the advisable time for a couple to come through for therapy? In order to cope with grief.
I suppose some people would want to come immediately, but like I said, I always prefer people to grieve first, to go through the mourning period, experience the hurts, experience the sleepless nights, and experience everything that comes with the trauma of losing a loved one. So usually, even when I get the referrals for the mummies who come from the gynecologist after they've lost their babies and the like, I give it at least 3 weeks because you really want to stew in it first before you can find support. But that's arguable because somebody does not have that information and you want to then do some psychoeducation on what grief is all about, what they should expect in their grief, what they should look out for, which is something you can do immediately after their grief. Okay, as couples, understand your differences. We'll do the personality test. How does this personality grieve? So if your wife is choleric, watch out for this. If your husband is phlegmatic, this is the thing to expect during their grief. So it's arguable. Immediately, no, I won't quite advise that. I prefer people to experience the loss. Then, when they do struggle, give it about 3 or so weeks, come through for therapy, seek therapy when you're struggling so that you are helped to navigate and understand what you're going through in the grief process.
Well, that's interesting. I had a question to say, does a melancholy grieve the worst amongst all of them? I wonder. But any last words for grieving couples as we close it up?
All right, let's un not underestimate, ignore the supports that our children may need. Remember, whilst we grieve as a couple, there are children involved who can tell that something is not right. Mommy seems angry. What has happened, So during the grieving period, couples should also make efforts, to support and reassure their children. And then you also give age appropriate education on what the loss or what has happened about the death, and so that we have open dialogue with the children so that they're able to be able to express their emotions as well with this loss.
Well, I think for me that's a really powerful point, and I just want to say thank you very much, Smiso. And I have also seen on Hope Channel where I think it's Pastor Khumbuzo Spanda invites people to come through and talk about their experiences. And I thought to myself, this is very therapeutic. And I think it helps people grieve. I just want to say thank you, Smiso, for the tips really that you have given us, and it opens up my mind, in terms of how to grieve better than one has done in the past. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm always excited to be here. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you.
Often you wonder why tears come into your eyes when burdens seem to be more than you can stand. But God is standing. He sees your fallen tears. Tears are her language. God understands. When grief has left you low, it causes tears to flow. When things have not turned out the way that you had planned, but God won't forget you. His promises are all true. Tears are a language. God understands. God sees the tears of a broken hearted soul. He sees your tears and he hears them when they fall. God weeps along with man, takes him by the hand. Tears are her language. God understands. God weeps along. Tears are her language. God understands.